Accession number 30419, reel 1.
We'll start off, and just to make sure that we're both recording and that I've got the recording levels right. So this is Roger Arnott, reel 1.
It's Annette.
Annette, I'm so sorry.
Yes, A-N-N-E-T-T.
Yeah, Roger Arnott, reel 1. And if you can just, I'm just going to check the levels as we begin.
Right, so you want me to talk?
Yeah, just...
Mary had a little lamb, its fleece was white as snow, and everywhere that Mary went... I've forgotten that. Thank you very much.
No, I think we're good. Thanks. Right. I can adjust it as we go along.
All right.
Recording. I live with fear. Okay. So I'll start with a really easy one. When and where were you born?
Well, I was born in Walton-on-Thames, Surrey, in the Cottage Hospital, at midnight between February 7th and February 8th, 1940. I know it was midnight because my mother always used to say she reckoned I was born on the 7th, and by the time the doctor noticed the date, he put it down as the 8th.
I think you may share Dickens' birthday.
Really?
Yes, off the top of my head, I've missed it. I have no feeling you do. Yes.
Oh, well. Well.
So, we won't get distracted by Dickens, are we? So, tell me what your sort of early childhood was like, what that area was like.
Well, it was, of course, the first year of the war. The second year, but from everything I read, not a lot happened in 1939. But my father went away to the Navy, and so it was, and of course I don't remember. So my father was away, but of course I was don't remember much until the doodlebugs came, and I certainly remember those. In 1944, and then the V1s.
What do you remember about them?
Well, I can remember that my earliest memory is one going over and my mother pushing the pram into the ditch. And so we sheltered down in a ditch, walking along the road, whilst it went over. But of course, if you could hear a doodlebug. And so it was when the engine stopped, you were in trouble. Well, the engine stopped. So we went into a ditch, and it fell on the river, but just by the weir, down from Walton-on-Thames. So that's what I remember. I don't remember too much more about the war, except that I remember airplanes in the sky and saying it's one of ours. We used to call them aerowazzers, and. So I became an aeroplane spotter from quite an early age. It might have had some effect.
What kind of planes were you looking out for?
Well, there would be Spitfires and Hurricanes, and but of course German bombers as well. And there were dogfights in the sky. Now, I'm not quite sure how much of that I actually saw and how much that's from newsreels and films later on. But there were a lot of aeroplanes in the sky. And, of course, everybody was in the forces, so you got used to... And we had some lodgers, and they were usually soldiers or sailors or airmen on moving through. And I had aunts, had a lot of aunts, and they all seemed to take lodgers. So I can remember that sort of thing, but not much more. The first real memories I've got are of after the war, which was a terrible time.
In what way?
Well, it was very cold. 1947 was, the snow was piled up along the streets, and we didn't have central heating like we have today, so it was pretty cold, chilblains, and a lot of deprivation, rationing went on. And the father came home, and that was a very difficult period, and I feel for all the servicemen who came home, who'd come home today from conflict. And I found out for myself later on what a very upsetting time that is. Going off to war, going off on active service, just going off on any adventure is fine. Later on, I sent people into Eastern Europe to sell computers, and I learnt that it was quite easy to brief them to go and live in Prague and Warsaw and behind the Iron Curtain. But it was the coming home that was a difficult time. And we had a lot of difficulty. I don't think my father was ever the same again. He was in a destroyer in the Mediterranean. His eardrums were blown to pieces. His nerves were shattered. And he had to come home and run the family builder's company. Well, of course, it was very difficult. And the relationship between my father and mother, you could see how difficult that was. It wasn't the same person she married, and I'm sure she wasn't the same as well, because she'd had all that difficulty. The women had all the difficulty of bringing up young kids. I had a brother 2.5 years older than I, so she went into the war with a 2.5-year-old and a new baby. Very, very difficult.
Work as well later on.
She was a teacher in primary schools, and she used to have to cycle off on her bicycle to a school called the Tin School. It was called the Tin School because it was made of corrugated iron. Another, I suppose, wartime measure. And she was a teacher there, and later on, when I was about 12, my mother and father just couldn't keep together anymore, and he left. And so she was cycling off to work on her bicycle, supporting us, because I don't think my father had much means of doing that. But there was good family support. The family in those days, you could throw a blanket over, grandmother's, grandfathers, uncles, aunts, and all within cycling or walking distance, it seemed.
So were you were fairly self-resourceful at this point, or?
I don't know. I mean, we had to get on with it, and my brother became in loco parent. Well, I don't know what the Latin is for in place of my father, but he was pretty bossy. That's the way I saw it. And I remember I was always, pretty much always in trouble. It was quite a... The early 50s were still pretty bleak. But things got better later on.
It does sound as if they did. So tell me about school.
I went to the primary and junior schools, state schools in Moreton on Thames, passed the 11 plus, and after one fascinating term at a secondary modern, I was sent off to Kingston Grammar School. So at the secondary modern we did woodwork and metalwork and very useful things, and there was a sports field. And everybody was always fighting. It was great fun, but I went to grammar school where we did Latin. There were two of us got on the red bus. My brother had gone to the school, to Kingston Grammar School. So I followed him, and we used to get the bus from Moreton-on-Thames, 7 miles to Kingston. And with me was a bloke called Martin Blampede, whom I never met before until we were stood in the school playground, A and B, Annette and Blampede. And they called out for this guy Blompier, and nobody moved. And it dawned on us what they meant was Blampede. Of course, in Moreton-on-Thames he was Martin Blampede, but at Kingston Grammar School he was Martin Blompier, which gives you some sense of the difference.
It's quite a jump, isn't it? It's well, quite a shift for you.
Yes.
To adjust to.
Yes. Certainly it was. And anyway, I went through Kingston Grammar School, and there was a cadet force, and I joined that, and went into the RAF section.
Yes, yeah, so tell me about the cadet force.
Extraordinary, really. I mean, we used to have field days, and we would march off through the streets of Kingston with drum and fife band, all of us done up to the nines in our boots and puttees and berets and battle dresses, thinking we were the bee's knees. We must have looked a pretty bedraggled bunch of schoolboys, but we thought we were terrific, and some people really took to it. Several every year would go to Sandhurst, and it was all right.
What did they teach you?
Well, they taught us how to blast your eardrums on the firing range. We used to go to, I forget where we used to go to do our, East Surrey's, the East Surrey Regiment. We used to go on their range and fire 303 rifles without ear protectors. Wouldn't happen these days.
Can you remember how they taught you to fire a rifle?
We had to lay down on the ground with the old on your front with the feet splayed and take the rifle stock in your, or is it the barrel, in the left hand and the stock in the right hand and squeeze the trigger. Looking through the sights, marvellous fun. One bloke got shot. We went on a summer camp, which we did from time to time. And a ricochet went straight through one of the guy's legs. It was a bit embarrassing. I think you had to go and do a detail up at the front, putting the targets up and down. And this ricochet bullet went through his leg. Nothing much was said. His leg got better, and we went on blasting away. Yeah.
What other kind of things did they teach you?
In the army, we did field craft, so.
Yeah. So how would it work? You'd have sort of periods of time with different.
Yes.
Areas.
We go off. I don't think there was a great deal of classroom work in the army section. And we go off to one or other of the commons round Kingston-on-Thames, down in Surrey, in a bus. Wonderful fun with a packed lunch. And we do tracking and attacking and defending, right flanking moves and left flanking moves, and small bushy top tree, 300 yards, six rounds in your own time, fire, that sort of thing, with blank ammunition. Terrifying, though, the residents of Headley Heath, that was one place we went. And we didn't learn, I mean, I don't think we learned very much, but it was great fun and exercise and open air. Then I joined the RAF section.
What made you do that?
Well, do you know, I can't really remember. I think maybe, I can't think, what was the impetus for doing that? Oh yes, of course, I became an aeromodeller. Yes, that's the other thing I did. I made model aeroplanes, and I would cycle from Warton-on-Thames to Epsom Downs, which was, I suppose, about 12 miles along the Kingston Bypass. Couldn't do that now. And lose model aeroplanes in the wind, basically. Anything that flew properly would finish up over Epsom and Ewell rather than. I did that, and I used to go to Chobham Common, and I think that gave me an interest in the aeroplanes. And I hadn't flown, but I thought I would like to.
And what did they teach you? What were they?
Well, it very nearly turned everybody off the RAF.
Really?
Because there was an enormous amount of classwork. We sat in the old. An old building by the quadrangle in Kingston Grammar School, and we read through what must have been the basic training manuals for aircraftmen, and we virtually transcribed it all, and it was deadly, deadly dull. And I don't know to what purpose this all was, probably just ticking in boxes and doing a syllabus. But fortunately, every year, maybe it was more than every year, we went on a camp to an RAF station. And there we did more blasting our eardrums, but we also got to fly. And I can remember my first flight, which was in an Anson, and it must have been about 1956, and it was in at Harden in South Wales. I remember it very, very well.
Tell me about it.
Well, we were, I mean, it was magic that we were actually going to go flying. But this was, remember, 56, you never got anything that you really wanted. All the toys were made by the carpenters in my father's yard. And you didn't have sweets, you didn't have television, you didn't have any gratification, really, of basic boyhood desires, except what you managed to do for yourself in making up games and adventures around the Fever Pond in Walton-on-Thames, and that, or swimming in the river. Of course, we had swimming in the river, but this was the first time that it was like Father Christmas arriving, that I was going to go and fly in an aeroplane. And it was an Anson, and it had a tail wheel, so we climbed up, clattered up. I can't remember whether there were any seats, but I was looking out the window. Tremendous noise when the engine started. Of course, it's those old piston engine aeroplanes made a terrific racket. And off we went. And I remember a chum of mine who was with me, he had only one eye. And I can remember him being the first before me to point out that we were airborne. And we were airborne. And we flew, I don't know how long, but long enough to be airsick. And then we came and landed. But it was a magic sensation, and with the clouds below you, and the Welsh hills below you, and then the clouds, and it was all great, I thought, the noise and the racket and the landing and taxiing back and getting out. And when the engines have stopped, you get this wonderful moment of euphoria in an aeroplane. It's all still exactly the same, even on an easy jet flight. When the engine waved down and it's wind down and it's quiet again, you feel that moment of euphoria.
You're back in the world again.
Yeah, that's right. Back on solid earth. The other thing I did a lot at school was sport. I played hockey. Kingston Grammar School just played hockey both terms in the winter. And I played cricket. I played a lot of cricket. And not that that's got anything to do with going on RAF camps, but that was the other thing that kept me sane.
Yeah. So what else were there any sort of further flights or anything else?
Yes, I remember going up in a chipmunk, and I think he must have been a chipmunk. Did they have chipmunks then? But it was not so thrilling as I'd expected it to be, a little monoplane. And I had great problem with the claustrophobia of the cockpit canopy. And I was very sick. And I suppose that was a bit of an off-putter. I don't remember anything else really noteworthy in the way of the flying, but I must have put in a few hours. And then it came to A-level time, and I did French and Spanish, which I enjoyed, because that was, to a certain extent, back to the metalworking and woodworking. They seemed to be concrete things, useful things, rather than ancient Latin history. And my intention was to join the RAF. I had been sent by a very far-sighted pilot officer, Dance. I remember his name because we called him Pod, P PO Dance Pod, had sent me off to Hornchurch to take the flying aptitude tests. Now, Katie, I'm 6'6", for goodness sake. I really shouldn't have been a pilot. 6'6" is far too tall for a pilot. But anyway, I was sent off for the flying aptitude test. I passed. I remember not an awful lot about them. I can remember standing stark naked on one foot with my eyes closed in front of a panel of doctors to make sure, I suppose, that I could balance. Why we had to be stark naked, I'm not quite sure. I can remember one or two coordination tests. There was an arrangement of a joystick and a kind of a flap lever, and you had to control a dot on the screen. Very advanced technology, I suppose. I think this must have been 1957. And it was counterintuitive. The dot went the wrong way. So if you push the stick to the left, the dot went to the right. So it's quite tricky. Hearing tests, eye tests, all kinds of tests, and I was all right. And I was awarded a flying scholarship. It was an absolutely great deal, and I think there's still, probably now the university air squadrons have taken this over entirely, but in those days they sent promising youngsters, just boys as far as I was aware, to do 30 hours flying at a local flying club to get a private pilot's license. Now, again, this was an amazing opportunity because here was something that was really good to do. And in the summer of 57, I went to Fair Oaks Flying Club near Chobham in Surrey, just up from Woking, and found a line of silver tiger moths in front of a flying club by a control tower outside a hangar. I mean, this was boys' own stuff. And I should tell you that I remember receiving the flying kit through the post. I got a cardboard box with crowns on, and in it was an oxygen mask and a flying helmet. And a flying suit, and all the and flying boots, for goodness sake.
Did you tell me about that? Did you try them all on at home?
Yes, absolutely, straight away. It was the best Christmas parcel I'd ever got, I think.
What was your family's reaction to that?
Well, it was just my mother by this time. My father was well estranged, which was a great, great shame. And I'm realising, as I get older, what tremendous effect it had, really. And I don't really know. My mother didn't show too much emotion. I don't know whether she was proud or whether she thought it was a good thing or... I don't really know. My brother, I don't know what he thought, but I thought it was absolutely tremendous. And we did, through that summer, I had to break it because I was going up to Scotland. And so I came back and I finished it just before school, in the beginning of September. And I can remember my final test in the Tiger Moth. It was a lovely, smooth autumn day. And the chief instructor, Wing Commander Arthur, at Fair Oaks had been a service training station in the war. And doubtless, it was a grass airstrip, reinforced grass, and doubtless it had been a relief airfield for the fighters. He was a wonderful old codger. He said, well, and my instructor, Ron Cobbett, keep it smooth, Rog, keep it smooth. So I did everything really smooth, and it went like a dream. Immediately after takeoff, he cut the throttle. You had to do a practice force landing after takeoff. That was great fun, because you got down below the trees before you opened up again. And we went down to the, flew out to the Hog's Back, where we used to chase motorbikes up and down in these lovely tiger moths. stalls and spins, bit of aerobatics, false landing practice. I love false landing practice. I mean, you fly along always looking out for a field where you might be able to land.
I should say it would actually, because one of the things we're really interested in is how people are trained. So if I don't know how much you remember, but it would be really interesting just to talk about, I mean, literally to go from the beginning of that training process and to talk about things like false landing, you know, spinning, sliding, all of that in quite a lot of detail. I don't know what you remember.
Well, yes, that would be good to do, because I can remember a lot of that.
Well, that's fantastic, because, I mean, that's really interesting, yeah. The way that people are taught. I mean, right from the beginning, can you remember the first day even?
Yes, I can. Do you want to do it now?
Yeah, I mean, yeah.
Well,
I don't know if I didn't interrupt a story.
No, I mean, it's what we're doing now, isn't it? I remember I had to cycle from Walton-on-Thames to Fair Oaks, which is about 5 or 6 miles. And there I found some other guys. One of them had a Lambretta scooter. And after we took lodgings. They gave us lodgings. I mean, fantastic. In Chobham, we stayed with an old couple. They were a bit eccentric. I can remember making the mistake of saying, yes, I loved apple pie, so we had apple pie every day. The old guy there said he was quite convinced that when they actually got to the moon, they'd find that it wasn't made of cream cheese. And I think he was serious. I mean, it was real countryside. And we used to go there and back being towed by this bloke on his Lambretta along the roads. That was exciting. Doing 40 miles an hour on a push bike is quite an experience. And the first flight, well, you were taken up for air experience, and you just had to watch him going through the drills. You learnt about going around the aeroplane to make sure it looked all right.
So what would that involve?
You look at here's a tiger moth, a picture of a tiger moth. So it's got a lovely a tail wheel. And two wings, and two cockpits fore and aft, and so you had to check that the tail planes moved freely, and the ailerons moved freely, that there was nothing, the tyres were blown up, basic things like that. There was a little door here, a hatch, you had to make sure that was closed. Just checking for general appearance, nothing was hanging off the aeroplane, and there were, importantly, no oil leaks. You had a look under the engine cowling, just to make sure nothing was dropping off that or dripping out of it. Propeller was all right. Then you clambered up into the cockpit. Now that's fun in a tiger moth in itself. You've got little doors that hinge down, and then you'd climb in through the top. There's no canopy. And I found that wonderful, absolutely wonderful. It's like riding a motorbike in the sky. And you put your harness on. You had to be helped with putting your harness on. There was a ground crew member there, and they helped you strap in. And then the instructor, who had you'd had some sessions in the ground school before. I should have mentioned that.
So what would you have already covered?
Yes, you would have covered effective controls, the instruments, the instrument panel, what was available, the checks that you had to go through, some basics about the engine, and meteorology. You had to you learned about the local area, the signals from the control tower, and the basic use of the intercom. There was no radio in the Tiger Moth, so you didn't have to do any calls or anything like that.
You remember the control tower signals?